You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The post-fight victory horns are sounding, and they are sounding for one Sugar Sean O'Malley, the new UFC bantamweight champion of the world. It's official. We can say it. Welcome to the Sugar Show, everybody, and welcome to the UFC 292 post-fight show. We are live here on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. Thank you for joining us. It is right now 3:13 a.m. on the East Coast, but the vibes are high, as they have been all week. New champion in the bantamweight division, Zhang Weili, with a record-breaking dominant decision win in the co-main event to retain the strawweight title. Ian Machado Gary, dominant win. We'll talk about that and more. I am Mike Heck, and joining me to talk all about it is a man you saw on the watch party, a man who was with us watching Sean O'Malley knock out Aljamain Sterling live. He is the one and only Mr. Hot Take, Mr. No Gray Area, Jed Meshew. Jed, how are you, sir?
I mean, I'm a changed man, Mike, because I now am living in the sugar era. It's so sweet. It's so sweet, Mike.
Woo. Yes.
What a great end to an event that was, let's be honest, I enjoyed it. It was not a bad event, but it was lagging a little. And then Sean O'Malley just rewrites the rules to the game, baby. And now we got something to talk about for real.
We certainly do. And again, like I said, you were live with me as this is all going down with GC. Sean O'Malley sniped him, just like he said he was going to do all week. I'm going to snipe him. I'm going to find his chin at some point. He makes a mistake. I'm going to find his chin, and he did it. Sean O'Malley is the bantamweight champion of the world, Jed Meshew. This just happened a couple of hours ago. Has it really sunk in here that Sean O'Malley did what a lot of people thought he wouldn't do outside of a value betting perspective, unless you were walking around Boston, because everybody thought Sean O'Malley was going to win in Boston.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone thought that this could happen. I don't think many people predicted it. Certainly. I think the smart money and the smart thought was that Aljo has a lot of advantages. Like all of the on paper, and I said it, various pre-show stuff and even on the watch party, all the on paper stuff was in Aljo's favor, but there were vibes. There was this idea that, you know, maybe O'Malley has a touch of the McGregor in him, this ability to sort of make unlikely outcomes occur in the best, you know, possible universe for him. And it happened eerily close to the McGregor Aldo finish, frankly. Him doing that over a guy colloquially known as Aljo is certainly something. And, you know, history may not repeat itself, but it appears to have rhymed in this instance. And so not like shocking that this happened. I'm not like, I can't believe what occurred, but it was very cool to see happen and sort of where we're going to go from here. The bantamweight division is never going to be the same. And it might not be for better, frankly, but I am very interested to see kind of how this rope plays out moving forward.
Yeah, I think at this point, at least during this reign, the bantamweight division will very rarely be like a co-main event division like it has been for so long. But Sean O'Malley is the champion and things are going to change very quickly. He obviously called out Chito Vera, something he's been calling for the whole time. And then he called out Gervonta Davis. You knew that was coming. It happened like within 3 minutes of this.
I did not know that was coming. And that's on me. Hand up, I was dumb. I should have known that was coming. But the speed with which it pivoted to, I guess I'll fight Chito because like people kind of want to see that one. But I don't want to give the business to the rest of these dudes because they're not big business. Let's fight Gervonta. It was lightning fast.
Yeah, it seems like this. We were heading in this direction. Marlon Vera just needed to do his job. He did it against Pedro Munhoz. This is where we're going. Like Sean O'Malley wants December. It seems like Chito Vera and his team are already planning on December. I saw a post from his manager saying, "Thank you for an epic week in Boston. We'll see you in December." This is the fight, right? Like Aljamain wants a rematch. I don't think there's any chance he gets it, even though he deserves it. But we don't use the word deserves because it doesn't really work in the UFC and in the sport in general. But we are getting Sean O'Malley, Marlon Vera 2 for the Bantamweight title. And this is the biggest fight you can make. This is the biggest fight in the history of the division.
Oh, easily. I think there was a very good argument that like a year ago, that rematch was the biggest fight in the division from a numbers standpoint. They're the two biggest stars in the division. After tonight, O'Malley is the number two star in MMA. Like I feel really confident and comfortable calling Sean O'Malley the number two biggest star in MMA and arguably number one, depending on your views on if Conor still intends to ever fight again. So it's unquestionably the biggest fight in the history of this division. It's the biggest fight that can be made in the sport right now, probably. Maybe you could do something with Conor and somebody else, but I think that this fight will do better numbers than Conor versus Chandler will. And I think Conor versus Chandler will do just fine because it's still Conor, but you got to have a real foil. And I think that's what Cheeto's bringing here. So yeah, I'd be pretty surprised at this point if that's not 296 December in Las Vegas, the headliner. And it's never going to, like you said, Sean O'Malley is never going to not fight in the main event of a pay-per-view from this point forward. That is just not his lot in life at this moment in time because the UFC is never going to put him on a card with Conor, who's the only dude who could take that spot from him at the moment.
And from a box office perspective, from a business perspective, and let's be honest, from an intrigue perspective, because Sean O'Malley has captivated and captured a lot of the casual viewing audience, it is obviously going to be a very interesting, however long, apparently, according to Sean O'Malley, this is going to be a very interesting 12 years because he's going to be doing this until 2035. Apparently, he's going to have a 12-year run. And if he's able to do that at this point, I'm just going to believe everything he says. And as interesting as this division is going to be moving forward with Sean O'Malley at the helm, I think the more interesting short-term question coming out of this fight is not where Sean O'Malley goes. It's where Aljamain Sterling goes because he was very forthright. He was very honest with his assessment of the fight. And where his future is, because if Sean O'Malley's knocking him out in the second round like that, he doesn't like his chances very much about going up to 145 and fighting Alexander Volkanovski. And that idea is probably completely off the table. I don't know if that fight ever happens unless Volkanovski shouts for it and gets it. It's probably done. So where does Aljamain Sterling go from here? Does he even attempt to go up to 45 and just try to earn a spot? Like, do you go up there and you try to fight the Ilya Topuria's? We know Topuria is about to get a title shot, but the Topuria's, the Evloyev's, those types of fighters, like, is this his future right now? Just go up there and try to pick apart one of these top five, top seven guys in hopes that you can intrigue Volkanovski into fighting you? Or is he staying at 135 in hopes of trying to get a rematch? That if you watch the post-fight press conference, Sean O'Malley does not seem interested in that at all. Where does he go from here? Because that might be the more interesting question in the short term.
Sean O'Malley is never fighting this dude again. He's going up to 145. He'll take some time on him and Hall. That's why I didn't really like his post-fight speech in the Octagon. It was very honest, and so full credit to him for that. But it's one of those things that I think he's going to wish he could take back just for saying it out loud of, I don't like my chances. Well, sure, you're not going to fight Volkanovski now. Like, you don't get to lose, go up, and fight for the belt. That's not how that works. So Volk isn't really even in consideration at the moment. The question for him is fundamentally, do I stick around here in a weight class where my best friend and training partner, I've already essentially told him, hey, I'm going to get out of the way so you can run this. And he's probably even ahead of me in title shot line right now, just because Sean O'Malley, I think, is more likely to say yes to Merab than to Aljo a second time. But it's just not going to work for him. He's going to look at him and be like, no, I'd have to fight a bunch of dudes I've already fought, or I don't really want to do again. And that's to entice O'Malley to get a rematch that he's not going to say yes to. So maybe he could hang around in case Cheeto wins and he could slide in there for, you know, to beat Cheeto or whatever. But I think the much simpler thing is just go up, because I think he'll do quite fine at 145. He might not beat Volkanovski. Hey, man, I got a secret. Nobody else at 145 has been beating that dude for like 4 years. So you're not alone. That, like, you can go fight, but you can get up, you move up, he goes up, and let's say he fights Josh Emmett. I don't know what Josh Emmett's career plans are, but, you know, he gets a fight like that and performs really well, then there's a very easy narrative: he was cutting too much weight, it was too hard for 135. He is so much better suited to this weight class. He's still strong and big, but he's got some more speed here. It's going to be great. So I think he's just moving up to 145. It's the most logical move forward for him. So I think that that's what we're going to get next for him.
Last thing before we move on to what Zhang Weili did, and obviously there's going to be much more talk about this for a long time, because this is one of those moments that's just going to stick with us. It's going to be in highlight packages. Baba O'Reilly, that knockout punch is going to be there forever. We talked about this bantamweight division a lot heading into this fight and where it all goes. And we know Marlon Vera is probably getting the next shot, but we have Merab, we have Corey Sandhagen, we have, even though you don't like to admit it because we don't really know what he's doing right now, we have Henry Cejudo, and then we have this influx of like other contenders on the rise right now. Who is the biggest loser in this fight? And I'm not talking about Aljamain Sterling. I'm talking about of the guys who are vying for that title opportunity. How much did Merab lose tonight? Because there is a story there, and it's a fascinating one. But with all the names that Sean O'Malley was presented, or all the names that came out of his mouth, Merab Dewalishvili was not one of them.
I alluded to this earlier. I think bantamweight is about to be awful. And that's going to really break the hearts of a lot of the hipsters who are under the false narrative that this is the best division of the sport. It's a very, very good division. The only reason that narrative started to thrive is because Conor broke lightweight. Like, Conor just stealing the lightweight belt and then being a lunatic and just broke lightweight for a very long time. And it's still suffering some of those effects, frankly. I think there's a pretty good shot here that that our new champion is going to break bantamweight. He's going to fight Cheeto. And if he beats Cheeto, he pretty much explicitly said that he doesn't give a shit about fighting anybody else in this weight class. Hey, why are you so interested in Gervonta Davis? Because he's a star, and there's nobody in the bantamweight division that's a star. There's Cheeto, and that's it. So maybe the UFC decides to be a little heavy-handed with him and make him defend a belt. But if he's as big a star coming off of this as I think he is probably going to be, I'm not sure that they force his hand. And so then it's, I would say Merab is sort of the front runner like right now, but I think that everybody in this weight class other than Cheeto Vera is moved one more fight away from fighting for the title. Wherever they were previously in line, you probably just add one more fight to it, because I think we're in for a bit of a stalemate at the top here, and maybe some interim titles coming down the line, because that might be a way to entice him if you can put an interim belt on somebody else.
Yeah, the intercontinental division, as I've always called it, with bantamweight, is now going to become a prize fighting division, yeah, with Sean O'Malley as the champion.
Corey Sandhagen may actually have come out of this okay, because maybe Corey Sandhagen, when he comes back, gets to fight like Merab for an interim title instead of having to fight Umar for nothing. So, the only person I can see that, like we're going to do Cheeto in December. I suspect we're going to get some layoff after that. And maybe the UFC is going to start hounding around to be like, hey, Umar, how long until you're back healthy? Let's try and fire you up. Because you could maybe sell a Piotr Jan rematch. Like, I could see O'Malley accepting Piotr Jan if he can get a couple of dubs in. Maybe Henry Cejudo, but you know that I don't treat him as a real person, so there's that. But I think he's going to defend against Cheeto, and I think we are not going to see him for maybe a full year. Like, he might defend against Cheeto in December, and then it's like, I'll wait until July or even the next go around at Madison Square Garden, something like that.
Yeah, you're probably right. So it's going to be interesting to see where this division goes, where Aljamain Sterling goes. A lot to kind of digest coming out of this main event.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Co-main event, Jen Meshew, Zhang Wei Li. She didn't get the finish, and I think it busted a lot of parlays and a lot of betting slips were ripped up and thrown on the floor. But all in all, this was about as one-sided as you could get. There was a moment where Amanda Lemos slapped on this weird submission sort of ninja choke-esque kind of a thing, and it looked like Zhang might be in a little bit of trouble. At least if you listen to the commentators, they're like, oh, she's turning blue. And dude, other than that, Amanda Lemos had, and maybe like one right hand early, she had nothing for Zhang Weili. This was a historic one-sided championship beatdown by Zhang Weili. And even though she didn't get the finish, and a lot of people had betting tickets that she would get the finish, boy, is it fun to watch her compete, because it's going to be tough to take that title off of her.
Yeah, I thought that this fight would look like this, only she'd get the stoppage coming in. I know that Amanda Lemos was like a darling dog this week. A lot of people were like, yeah, she can do some real violent stuff, and Weili Zhang's not impervious to getting hit. I was like, sure, can't be super shocked if it happens, but I watched Weili Zhang just like throw Jessica Andrade out the cage, and I basically watched Jessica Andrade do the exact same thing to Lemos, so I think I know how this is going to work. And it looked like that, like, I mean, best performance of Wiley's career, I would say, all things considered. She has really, like, for when she entered the UFC on that big, big, long winning streak, like 19 fights or whatever it was, she was largely just like an athlete who did a bunch of, like, was just the best athlete in the division. And that was dope. And it won her a belt, frankly, by just being the best athlete. And then she lost, had a couple of setbacks. And she's refined her game a lot. Like, she's really smart in her approach to this fight. She minimized any opportunity Lemos had to generate consistent offense, got to her spots, and just ragdolled Lemos. Like, if you look at the stats on this fight, it is unbelievable. It's like 288-6 or something.
296 to 29.
Yeah, those are cartoon numbers. Like, I could go load up EA UFC 4 right now, and I could not put those numbers on like the easy mode setting. And she did it in an actual world championship fight against a totally viable contender. So it was an incredible performance from her. And shouts to Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier, because tonight was a banner night for the, that submission's close, and me being like, oh, good, I know that she is very safe. As long as they're saying it's close, the safest place you can be, like Fort Knox, probably the White House is like a fairly secure building, and locked into a submission that Joe Rogan is squealing about saying that it is close. You could not be more safe than being in those positions.
Yes. What a performance. And yeah, 296 to 28 is, or to 29 is ridiculous. And the significant strikes, 163 to 24 for Zhang Weili. I mean, just most significant strikes landed, biggest strike differential in women's UFC history. You're laughing.
I was live blogging this like for the site, right? And I gave, I think I did the first two rounds or 10 nines for Weili. And then they showed that stat after round two where the stat, like the striking totals live were like, so Amanda Lemos just landed six strikes. And in my live blog, I wrote, here's the stat update. I perhaps should have scored some of these previous rounds 10-8s. Like, it was just unbelievable, like how nothing was happening from Limoges. It didn't even feel like early on, it didn't even feel like she was that ineffective, but she had nothing to offer, like nothing.
So that brings up the big question here. Yan Xiaonan is right there. And if they go to China, that's obviously a massive fight. And in fact, well, even if they don't, like they could go to Boston and this is a very big fight. They could go to New York and this is a very big fight. They can go anywhere and this is a big fight, but they have to go to China with this one. So Tatiana Suarez kind of lost out here. Did she not? I mean, she's going to get her shot. She's going to get another win. I suggested, because I felt like I knew where this fight was going to go, they should have just done Mackenzie Dern versus Tatiana Suarez as a fight night main event. I think that would have been a really good call. But apparently, which flew under everybody's radar, Mackenzie Dern is fighting Jessica Andrade at UFC 295. They showed her on the screen and there was a graphic which no one announced and nobody knew about. So it's gonna be Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. That is what's gonna happen. Is Tatiana Suarez just gonna sit around and wait for the winner of that fight, or is she gonna have another fight? What did tonight do to Tatiana Suarez's championship aspirations, and how far back is she going to have to wait now?
She's probably going to have to wait. A quick shout out to Jessica Andrade, who's trying to speed run the end of career losing streak. It's going to be her fifth fight this year. She lost three in a row, and she's going to turn around and fight. Just take some time off. Like, you don't have to keep doing this, but Tatiana Suarez is, it makes way more sense for her to fight Mackenzie Dern. Than that. Instead, she's probably just going to sit on the sideline. She was originally booked to fight Verna Jindrzejowa. Maybe they, I don't know how long Jindrzejowa's out. Because I think it was a knee injury, but maybe they just rebooked that. But I would assume that Tatiana Suarez will get the honor potentially of weighing in as a backup fighter for the impending Weili versus Yan fight. But she ain't jumping the line. Like, if Limoges had won, we had talked about it. There was very much a world where Tatiana just gets to, okay, it's time to do this. This is clearly where this division is going. Let's just get there. But did you hear the Chinese reporter in the, I don't know if you listened to the Post presser, Mike, a reporter who I believe was Chinese, noted to Dana White that on Chinese social media, the knockout or the fight from Weili had generated 1.9 billion views. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that I would cut off a pinky if the UFC doesn't book Weili versus Yan and do that in China, because why wouldn't they? Give me a reason. Any reason at all. If that fact is true about 1.9 billion with a B, the two of them in China is the biggest no-brainer in the history of combat. Like, I don't know what else to tell you, man.
I feel like we could maybe get this in before the end of the year. There is rumblings about perhaps a card in China by the end of the year, maybe.
Dana like kind of hinted at it in the presser too. He didn't say it because he leaned heavily on the we don't book fights. But someone was like, hey, there are rumors you're thinking about China before the end of the year. And he was like, wink or whatever. So it seems certainly after tonight, it may have been a situation where they were just going to like, let's wait and see about what happens here. But I would say after tonight, that's going to get a full court press.
I honestly, if we're talking about futures and fights, the eventual Zhang Weili Tatiana Suarez fight is going to be incredibly fascinating. I am very much looking forward to that matchup when it does happen.
Tatiana's going to run her, but it's going to be dope.
It's going to be interesting to see. That's a really, really good fight, and I'm highly intrigued by it. Ian Machado Gary, Jed Meshew, goes out there and just lays waste to Neil Magny, who is just incredibly tough. I thought there are multiple points in this fight where Ian was just going to kick him in the leg, and the leg was going to give out, and the referee is just going to save him from himself. But Magny makes it to the cards. Ian Machado Gary, on one of the judges' cards, 3-10-8s. Incredible performance. This is as one-sided as it could get. This is about as good as it could be for Ian Machado Gary outside of getting a quick finish, but he calls out Wonderboy Thompson. Apparently Dana White said they already reached out to Steven about doing that fight and he turned it down. I don't know if he's going to be able to turn this one down, dude. Honestly, I feel like cooler heads are going to prevail, and I think Steven's just going to have to take this fight if he wants to get to this title run, because I think the fights that he wants, the UFC just isn't going to give him right now. So biggest takeaway from Ian Machado Gary's performance and his upside at 170, because there are some fun guys moving up the ladder, but I feel like Ian Machado Gary is ahead of all of them right now.
That's going to be weird. I do want to talk about Wonderboy first, because as good as this performance was from IMG, I think this is going to be a broad narrative, perhaps supersede it, just because Dana throw under the bus isn't the right term. I don't know, like held under the bus while it went over and reversed over. Like Dana just tried to bury Wonderboy, but be like, yeah, he passed up the fight. I don't know if that's true or not, because I just don't take things Dana says at face value. If it is, I have no idea what Wonderboy's doing. Like, yeah, I think you're going to lose this fight, but like, who are you trying to fight? If it's like, if your goal is to fight a tight for a title, you've already lost all the wrestlers in front of you. Like who, and you have explicitly said you don't want to fight him. Who the hell do you want to fight if it's not like somebody like this? So I don't know.
He wants the Usman fight.
Okay. Well, I don't think, maybe, I don't know. Just say yes, dude. It's fine. I don't think the Usman fight's going to go well for you, and I'm not even sure you're going to get it. So I don't know. Ian Machado Gary was dope tonight. Perfect performance. Maybe not perfect. 96. He could have finished it. Casey and I talked about this in the presser briefly. Like, I know many people won't hold that against him, and I don't really hold it against him, but there is a point for me where when you are fighting against somebody who is no longer capable of defending themselves reasonably, which is where Magny was in that third round, pretty much. He was just in full-on survival mode. Not putting a coffin nail in is like a missed opportunity, but it's not a bad performance. His performance was obviously sensational, and every other part of it, too, was what is great. Like, he carried himself like a star this whole week. I don't know that he has won yet, but my takeaways from this event are I'm an Ian Machado Gary fan now. Think that dude's dope. Both the way he fights and the things he says I find enjoyable. And some of it's insane. Like, I'm not here to say that all of it's reasonable and I agree with all of his takes. His statement that he was carrying the card pre-fight is insane. Several of his statements afterwards are insane. But he's carrying himself with a great confidence that is appealing to me. The way he handles his business is great. And I thought his post fight was awesome. You know, like he gave Neil Magny his props, but didn't back down at all from the shit he talked about Neil Magny and doubled down on the stuff he said. And that's a fun, like you don't have to be like, oh, we're bonded in battle now. So like, we're all gravy. You know, it's like, no, F that dude. He still sucks. You don't say that shit. But respect to him for, you know, knuckling up and fighting me. Like, you gotta at least give a man respect for doing that, but he still sucks ass. I loved Ian Machado Gary's performance this whole week. I'll tell you what, I'm super high on him, man. Like, I know that JDM is the darling delight of the welterweight division. Ian Machado Gary is this weight class is, if there's a dude who's gonna take the belt from Shavkat when he does get it, Ian Machado Gary is gonna be that dude.
Yeah, incredible performance. The man backed up everything he said. It's going to be interesting if he gets the Wonderboy fight. Do they just go back to Jeff Neal? I don't know if the ship has sailed on that. I would still like to see that fight if it can happen. I think that's a really good like next test because welterweight has a lot of litmus tests. And I feel like Neil Magny is sort of the dude that welcomes you into the top 10 to 12 range. Neil is like, you're a top seven guy.
Give me Sean Brady. Let me see. At the post pressure, IMG was like, I am the best jiu-jitsu player in the world. Y'all don't know it because you've never seen it. Like, that's only a loose exaggeration. He was like, if I fight in December, I might F around and then try and win a no-gi world championship. Because, like, I'm telling you guys, I'm that good at grappling. You just don't know because I've never showed it to you. I would like to see it. If this is true, then I have him very highly ranked in our latest rankings, which I did tonight. If he is also the greatest grappler to exist on earth, I'm underrating him by a significant margin. I'd like to know it. And Sean Brady gonna tackle that dude's ass. So let's just do that. I want it. The top of this division ain't nothing but dudes who are gonna put you on the mat and check and real check you right there. Let's do it. I don't know what Sean Brady's doing. Seems like it'd be a great time for these two guys to fight.
If I'm Sean Brady, I am doing nothing but calling this guy out.
Yeah.
That's all I'm doing. Just focus all your attention on trying to get that fight. I don't think that's going to happen, but if you're Sean Brady and you can get to Ian Machado Gary and force Ian Machado Gary to talk about you, do it.
Dude, Shavkat was about to fight Kelvin Gastelum for God knows what reason. Like, just fight Ian Machado Gary now.
Ooh.
That's a better win for you in the division and in MMA. Let's do that. Like, if I'm any dude who knows I have to fight backwards next fight and I'm at the top of this weight class, and I'm not saying that because that's an easy win. I'm just saying it because like that's going to give you the most bang for your buck if you can do it. And as Casey and you have, as you said a lot about Khamzat, I think it was Khamzat, fight the dude now because he's 26, man. He ain't getting worse over the next 5 years. Fight him now.
Yeah, that would be super interesting if Ian started calling him out. So good win for him. Good win for Mario Bautista. He gets it done. We talked about Marlon Vera, where he goes. He earned himself a title shot with his victory. What are you laughing at?
Hey, Mario Bautista won a fight on the main card. And Chito Vera, let's talk about the thing that matters. I just love that fight happening on this card is so freaking weird.
I think if we go back and watch it, and I'm not trying to disrespect Mario Bautista, dude got out there, he still took the fight after losing Cody Garbrandt, and he won. And he got in there and won the fight. But is it one where
if you look back on this event, you're going to remember the Chris Weidman Brad Tavares fight. You're not going to remember this fight that happened.
Yes, and you segued perfectly because before we get to the peeps, I do want to talk about what happened in that fight because we started the watch party right before round two was going to start in the Chris Weidman, Brad Tavares fight. So we got to watch it and Brad just kept nailing him with leg kicks. There was a point in the second round where I thought he broke his leg again. I was like, oh no, he went down. He started limping on it and it just got bad.
He may have torn his MCL. I don't know if you caught that at the presser. I don't know what you caught from the presser. Aljo said, and you know, not a doctor and it's not there, but Aljo was asked about it. And I believe he loose said that like there's concern that he injured it. And then Dana, I think specifically said that he was asked about the Weidman fight and he was like, I would like Weidman to retire. They think he tore his MCL in the fight. Like, so he's out for a while anyway, because he now has on the other leg, not on the previously surgeried one, but leave the leg that was getting kicked a bunch, lead leg, theoretically he has suffered actually like legitimate knee damage. So Casey, you laughed at me in the pre-fight Q&A when I was like, I'm concerned about this man's leg, and you were like, his leg's fine. I was half right. It was the wrong leg. I should have been concerned about the other leg.
I said on the preview show that honestly, and I know Chris Weidman is very hungry and he's very competitive, and he wanted this fight to be the beginning of a title run. And I think a lot of people roll their eyes with that, but Chris was very serious about that. And the argument I made on the preview show that the best case scenario, the best thing that could happen for Weidman, for Tavares, for everybody else who loves Chris Weidman and loves what he was able to do in his career, was that Weidman would lose a somewhat competitive decision and then just be done. Because you came back, dude. You came back after all of that, right? You go in there, your leg is compromised in the fight. You still fight back. You still land some shots. You got Tavares kind of reeling at a point or two in that fight with some of the shots that you landed. You lose a competitive decision. What a perfect time to walk away. Like, no one's going to be down on you for that. I just think the title run hopes are over. You did something a lot of people believed you may never do again. There were talks. You might just lose your leg altogether because of this injury. But you made it back. You competed like a freaking champion. You didn't win, but you competed. And I felt like this was the best case scenario for everybody involved. And it played out that way. So I guess I'll ask you this, and it's kind of a bummer to say, but I think it's a conversation needs to be had, especially after what Dana said. Was this the last Chris Weidman fight?
I mean, there's a really good chance it was the last Chris Weidman fight in the UFC. I think we talk about this all the time. If you just blanketly assume that no fighter is going to retire, you're going to be right far more often than you're going to be wrong. If he did, in fact, tear his MCL or you know, any other ligament going on in there and is looking at 6 months, another year on the sidelines for surgery rehabilitation, and now he is two legs down or two legs with 50 combined surgeries or whatever it is, something, some insane number between them, I think there's a very good chance that he just kind of goes home, looks and says, no, I came back from the big one, like you were saying, and that's enough. I'd be a bit surprised, though. I do think he's going to want an exit. He's just going to want that real, the moment, if not to come back. So if I'm putting money down, I think we will see Chris Weidman fight at least one more time. I am personally, I think it's time, Mike. I know that he's not currently in the organization, but we can mend these fences. Let's just rock it back in a year and a half, Luke Rockhold. Let's just do it.
Yes.
That was supposed to be the rivalry that was going to define middleweight for like the next generation. And then they fought the one time. It was awesome. And then they never fought again. And now both dudes got washed almost overnight. And now here we are. When Chris is ready to come back, let's just sign Luke for one more. Luke has specifically said that he like doesn't want to end his combat sports career off that bare knuckle fight with Mike Perry. So come back home. Let's run that back. It'll be something, and it's a good retirement fight for both dudes. Run it back as a retirement fight. It's ideal.
I love that idea. I think that's the only fight that would make sense for Chris at this point. Greg Rodriguez, kind of some controversy with the finish of Dennis Tallulin. We'll see how that plays out. It is
no controversy. It's cool.
Okay.
The rule of cool applies. That was dope. So I don't care that it was arguably illegal. Also, if you don't want to get punched in the back of the head, don't present the back of your head to get punched. That's long my official standpoint on this. I think it's a dumb rule. So don't do it.
Welcome back to the UFC. Kurt Holleboe gets his first official UFC win, triangle choke against Austin Hubbard. Kurt Holleboe will continue on, called out Paddy Pimblett. He became the 71st lightweight currently on the active roster to call out Paddy Pimblett. So, I mean, go for the gusto. Brad Katona and Cody Gibson put on a friggin' show. What a friggin' fight that was. Katona gets
Gibson
the contract.
Getting a contract.
Is that what Dana said?
Well, he didn't say those words, but someone asked him, is it safe to assume that, like, with, you know, Stephen Bonner, Cody Gibson, and he was like, yeah.
All right, so good. Much deserved. Andre Petrosky, mm-hmm. Gerald Meerschaert. It was the most fun middleweight fight I've probably ever seen. But Petrosky wins the splitty. Natty Ice is just something special. She beat the hell out of Andrea Lee. That fight was not really all that competitive. And then Karina Silva submits Marina Moroz, gets a little revenge from their fight from several years back. But Natty Ice, man, before you get to the questions, I got to talk about her. Yeah, got to talk about her. She's so good. I ranked her. She is now going to be in my flyweight rankings. I think I have her at like number 12 after that performance against Andrea Lee. I am super excited to see where she goes, Jed.
I love this. I went for it. I ranked them both. Both of the Silvas are in my flyweight rankings, baby. Let's go.
Nice.
Natty Ice is higher than Karina Silva, but the bottom of the rankings, there's a lot of opportunity for someone to slide it there. And why not? Karina Silva, look, Natty Ice beat the hell out of KGB Lee, and that was dope. But Karina Silva, frankly, impressed me more because we sort of anticipated this, what Natty Ice was going to do. And our conversation, you and I had the conversation beforehand that Karina Silva is the one that she already lost to Moroz. Moroz is sneaky like a hitter. Like she is sneaky, a very competitive, very tough out in this division. And Karina Silva whooped her and tapped her right at, with the buzzer beater tap too. I love those. So I was even more impressed by Karina Silva because she exceeded expectations, whereas Natty Ice is just like, all right, it's time for her to start making real moves here and see what we've got on our hands with her. But yeah, look, the prelims are fun, man. Really fun card. They're
really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. All right.
No issues. And that's, it was awesome.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, let's bring in E. Casey Lydon. And we'll take a few questions before we get out of here. It is pretty late, so we're not going to take a whole bunch of questions, but we'll take a few.
Mike, I didn't ask you this when I was on the thing. Our first question is going to be for me to you, Mike. How do we feel about Cheeto not getting a mic on him after beating Pedro Munhoz?
It's a missed opportunity. Like, your promotional packages, like, you got enough there. Like, I get it. You just go back to that first fight and how it played out and some of the things that were said and whatever, but you miss an opportunity here. You certainly miss an opportunity not giving Cheeto the mic. Cheeto was probably the fourth most popular fighter on the entire card. I think Zhang Weili was probably number two.
Pop.
Yeah, dude. Chris Weidman was very popular because of the story and the comeback, and then Vera's like right there, like super over with Boston. So I kind of expected him to get a microphone in his hand, and that he's so incredible watching this guy because he never looks like he's even in a fight when it's over. This one, like, he had some sweat in his, like, his beautifully done hair had like some sweaty bangs, like three or four of them, and that's like the most you've seen Cheeto Vera like perspire in a fight in like 5 years. It's insane.
Yeah, and that fight was fun as hell. Pedro Munhoz always comes. I thought he had an argument to win the fight. I did not think Pedro won, but I thought that there's a reasonable argument that he won. If you want to give him the first two rounds, yeah, I don't have any issues with that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, Cheeto won by pride rules. We'll go with that.
I gave Cheeto the first. I gave Pedro the second.
Yeah.
I also made
decisions about Cheeto won by 75% rules. Of media had Cheeto winning, and actually, surprisingly, 60% of fans. I'm sorry, Pedro winning, and 60% of fans also had Pedro winning, which is surprising. But
wow,
it was interesting. It was a close
Pedro
fight,
kicked the legs a whole bunch, and leg kicks don't win fights.
Yep.
Of course not.
However, I do have it on good authority that Cheeto did some post-fight interviews standing because his legs were all jacked up. So,
yeah,
maybe leg kicks do matter, and you should start factoring those into what happened in your scorecards.
Is Paddy Pimblett the only fighter who hasn't called out Paddy Pimblett? That's a great question.
Fantastic work, Steph. Proud of you. Steph, that's a great question.
Well done. Share
that one.
All right.
Missed opportunity for Patty too. Patty could do it. Anderson called himself out for years.
Yeah. I bite my clone. What do we actually think about the stoppage for the main event?
A plus.
No notes. I don't think there was really anything bad about it.
Me either.
I think it was a perfect stoppage. I will go one beyond. I think it was fantastic. I believe Mark Goddard is the second best referee in MMA. I think Jason Herzog is the best and has been for some time. But Mark Goddard is rarely bad and usually very good, and I thought he nailed it. You can always leave a stoppage one or two punches longer, and I won't be like super upset. And I know that a lot of fighters would prefer that, and you saw some outpouring of that, but by the way you're supposed to stop fights, nailed it. Like Aljo got clubbed a bunch, and then the time he turned away, that he was no longer rolling in or rolling up. He rolled away. He functionally turned his back. If he was standing against the fence, it was a back turn. Like, yeah, that's it. That's an ideal stoppage.
Yeah. The way he turtled that direction is just that's pretty much the fetal position. You're done. Mm-hmm. And if he wanted, there's many other ways to get up and defend yourself. That's not one of them. And I thought Goddard, is that the ref tonight?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought he gave the champ the proper amount of time to recover. So
I agree. I totally agree. When that right hand landed, I thought he killed him. Like, I thought
he didn't, but it looked like it.
Yeah.
He recovered and was able to try to defend, and Sean landed like a bunch of big hammer fists. Mm-hmm. And I think Goddard did a nice job, because he could have stopped it after like the third or fourth hammer fist, because he was landing them. Mm-hmm. And then Aljo was able to sort of get his wits to him and start to fend. And I think the way Mark looked at it was, I mean, give this dude like one more big shot before I step in there. And then after he sort of turned Aljo over, like kind of threw his legs to the side, and he landed that like everything he had right hand, it that just busted open Aljo's eye. Mm-hmm. That was it. Like, that was the shot. That was a gnarly punch on the bottom. And I got her, mm-hmm, stepped in and stopped it. And I had no issue with the stoppage, especially hearing Aljo sort of talk about it at the end. Like, he felt like maybe the stoppage was a little early, but at the same token, he was honest. He was like, I didn't even know where I was. Like, I forgot I was in Massachusetts. I forgot all
you
this stuff.
You dyed your freaking hair green because you're in Massachusetts, you know?
Right. And that's so, why I don't have a real issue with the stoppage. Like, now if Merab Dawalish really wants to come out publicly and be like, oh, that's a bad stoppage, like, fine. You're the teammate. Yeah. Go ahead.
But Rob's a terrific friend.
Yeah. I didn't think the stoppage was bad. I think after that huge right hand O'Malley landed, I was like, okay, I think we've seen enough here.
Yeah. Dude, there was like 20 unanswered bombs.
Yeah, I think at some point. It was like
18, at some point, you got to do more than not get put unconscious to consider that intelligent defense. Yeah.
Right. But if Aljo had survived that, man, whew. Interesting. KO of the year, enough for fighter of the year. It's not the KO of the year.
Neither. It's neither.
Yeah.
Fighter of the year, you're never going to win fighter of the year with one fight. The only person who could maybe pull it off is John Jones, maybe could have done it just by beating Ciryl Gane, but he's going to fight Stipe and probably win fighter of the year as a result, which, you know, fine. It's definitely not KO of the year. It's going to take a fucking miracle to beat Izzy for KO of the year, given all of the surroundings of that. This is great. This is slightly damaged by not being like, if that was a clean faceplant KO, if Aljo did turf it on that shot, then we could have a real conversation. Because it's the way it went, it might make some people's top fives, but we've had a lot of incredible violence already this year and still almost half of the year to go.
Cheeto just posted to Twitter with a giant joint in his mouth, fighting for a world title very soon. So my guess is they're already talking about this one. So,
it's definitely happening. Yeah. I'd say if O'Malley comes and beats Cheeto, he'll be on Fight of the Year ballots for sure.
Yep.
I think we know the answer to this one, but we might as well just kind of talk about it a bit.
Is Sean O'Malley a crossover star? Like with the boxing, I guess? in that sense?
Talking boxing? I thought, just everything. I was just kind of talking about just for people that don't, like people who don't even follow the sport know who Conor is. People who don't follow the sport know who Ronda is. Do people who don't follow fighting, do they know who Sean O'Malley is?
Yes. I don't think people who don't follow sports at all know who Sean O'Malley is, but people who just follow sports. Like, I got texts from people today being like, is O'Malley going to get gassed up tonight? But they know who he is. And I'll tell you what, tomorrow he is going to be known by a broader spectrum of fans than just MMA fans or even just sports fans. He's not Conor, but like, he's going to be the next best thing to Conor that we've had since, like, he's going to be the best star that MMA has had since Conor.
I think the part that maybe fans like is because he's the next biggest thing since Conor, yet he's not Conor. Like, we get I think that's the good part. Like, this is new. So I think that's like just cool. Yeah.
Dude, he's next gen Conor. He's Conor for the kids.
Yeah, he's a big gamer and all that stuff, so that all that's going to do is just help him.
All the things. It's going to do great. Yep. So he's going to fight Cheeto, and he's not going to fight for like a year.
Yeah. How can Dana say he doesn't make fights on the night, but then say they reached out to Wonderboy and he's turned down the Gary fight? He just says anything that suits him at any time. So I had heard like some rumblings that if Ian beat Neil, that they were going to try to book that one as a main event at the end of the year. So them reaching out to Wonderboy and offering it him kind of on the spot is not surprising to me based on things that I had heard, but it didn't, like, this is not saying like this is a done deal or anything like that, but it just seemed like this is the direction the UFC was going to go with the reaction that Machado Gary this week. But I mean, this is what Dana does, right? Yeah. Like, this is what he does.
Yeah, I don't care about Dana being like marginally hypocritical. It's whatever. I did notice it today. Someone's got to get in his ear. Dude, just make fights on fight night. Like, it's fine. It's not like we're holding you to any standards. The media does not hold you to any standards in general. But two, it would just be way better view and news cycle and all things if you would like actually talk about what's going to be next for these fighters that just fought, instead of the questions being, hey, what's your take on this performance? Cool. What's going to be next? Not going to answer that. All right. What about the Patriots? And what about these other things? Like, when are you coming back to China? Like, no, just talk about the only way you have to communicate about the fighters who just fought is your opinion of the performance and what is going to come next for them. Why can't you just, somebody can write you a memo sheet of, here's sort of what we're thinking. We're not locked into this, but I'll tell you what, I would love to watch a guy like Ian Machado Gary fight a Stephen Wonderboy Thompson or fight a thing. You know what? I'm not saying we're going to do it, but you're right. Doing Weili Zhang versus Zhang Xiaonan in China, it's incredibly big business for us. That's the sort of thing that we're really into. Why not have those conversations? Like, it's so dumb and such a waste of the time. I don't get it.
If we can have Jan right there, cage side. I mean, it was odd, but this is, I thought.
Do you feel like? Because the one time he really did make fights after the fight was Colby, the whole Leon Colby thing, and that was in March. March. But
he also did it in December with the light heavyweight title. That fight sucked. We booked a new light heavyweight title.
Yeah, because they needed a main event for that card that was really hurting. But I guess my big question is,
that was dope. We came out of that being like, this is news and great and interesting.
Yeah. Oh, no, certainly. So I guess my question in the fallout of this is that if Sean O'Malley really wants to fight Chito Vera in December, and Leon, if what Colby has to say about John Jones being like, nah, dude, I ain't giving this dude the rub, which actually wouldn't surprise me based on some of the things these two have said about each other. Is Leon and Colby even going to happen this year? Like, do you feel like that fight's even going to happen this year, or is that going to be pushed to next year now?
I do not personally believe that fight's going to happen this year. I don't know. Feel like we'd have made some traction on it by now. That fight has been out there for what, 4 months, 5 months as the thing that was going to happen. So I don't know. I would guess that's not going to happen, which means, and also if you have to pick one of those two, what do you think the UFC is going to think is better business? It's going to be O'Malley Cheeto. So they're going to pick that one over doing Leon Colby.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this just screams, we have to call John Jones and be like, if he really feels this way, just be like, dude, just, you're going to have to deal with it. Sorry. Like, these guys are fighting in the co-main event. That's it. You're just gonna have to deal with it. We'll put you at different pressers if we have to, but this is your co-main event, pal. We got to do it.
Yeah. I doubt John would really say no. Be fine.
Yeah. UFC already uploaded the finish to YouTube. I don't think they've ever done this straight after a pay-per-view for a title fight. Are they actually promoting now just only for O'Malley? So I will say this. The UFC is trying different things. And you can see it on the broadcast.
Oh, you think that's what this is?
I mean, obviously it's O'Malley. Yeah.
No, I'm like I hadn't even considered that as being like, they're just sort of trying it out.
Yeah, that's what I think they're doing. I think they're trying it out. They're trying a lot of things out. I like the picture-in-picture stuff they're doing. I kind of like the fighter reactions. Like, even just showing just the little nuances. Chris Weidman is fighting, and they just do a little picture-in-picture with Aljamain Sterling, just watching with bated breath his teammate about to lose to Brad Tavares and having an injured leg. Like, these things are really cool. I like some of the new slow motion replays they're doing, the alternate angles of certain things that they're doing. Like, the broadcast just seems like more fun. They're trying new things to see if they're going to work. And I think having a cell phone image of the finish and just throwing it up on the screen, I don't know if it's like the cell phone image of Dana's, you know, from Dana's social, or if they show the actual finish.
It's
the world knows by now.
The broadcast finish. They show the broadcast shown, finish on YouTube.
Yeah, they've pumped it on all their socials. I mean, they've been out with it. It's really good. Casey and I were talking about this in post. Like, I had not considered that this is them trying something, which would be cool if that's the case. I just sort of thought that the UFC are not fools, and they know that this is the moment to capitalize on the biggest thing that they can have. And so they are actually doing the promotional bit. Maybe not in perpetuity for O'Malley, but this is the one. If you can only pick one, this is the one to do it. You want to get this out. You want this to be everywhere. You want the clip to be on SportsCenter, top 10 tomorrow, running endlessly, endlessly, endlessly. You want to put him on Jimmy Kimmel and Fallon and do all that stuff. And I think that that's what we're going to see. But it would be dope if this is just how they were going to move forward, because it's much more reasonable.
Yeah. And then we're not going to do this every single time, but moments like this, yes. Like, if they could redo, you know, at the time, putting the Leon Edwards head kick up there, I think with that lineup, they probably should have done that as well.
Izzy knockout, yeah. But
Izzy knockout would have been another good one.
Just a big moment.
So,
I slightly disagree. They're trying to do something different. I actually agree with this comment. They're actually promoting. That's all. This is actually promotion. And I don't understand why he's doing something different by actually promoting. And this is what you do.
Right.
And this is the right move. This was the right move.
Right. And I think the actual like promotion for this card was really good. Dana is not, he's just not that guy anymore. He's still like the face of the company and people care what they have to say, but he's not that guy anymore. Like even at the press conference when, you know, I asked him about just being in Boston, the crowd was all fired up. It wasn't, I don't know. Like the way it was set up, I'm like, oh man, Dana's going to actually like get really excited here. He's like, no, we broke the gate record. Good home. And I was like, oh, I thought you'd come up with something a little better than that, but that's just what it is. Richer. I think the UFC the UFC has really good, smart people working for them. And just because Dana is not the one promoting, it doesn't mean that they as a company cannot. Okay. And they're doing unless there's a power slap event the same week or the same month as a card is happening, they did a really good job of putting this card over this week, I thought.
Yeah, man. I thought they did great. I thought it maybe got to me a little bit just because of the ubiquity of it, but the interstitials with Sean O'Malley and his like commercial spots like during the prelims and stuff. That's all good. And this is, I feel like we say it all the time. Haven't been really like negative on the UFC tonight, which is great because I don't always want to bag on him. But like when people are asked the question, why are you mean to the UFC? Mm-hmm. There are many moral reasons for that. But one of the biggest one is just at a fundamental level, I am aware of what they're capable of doing because I have seen it. This is it. Like this 291, 290, like that stretch of pay-per-views is like, hey, here's where what you should demand as a fan every time. They're because they have the ability to do this. They just simply choose not to for most of it. And when they do, great things happen. 290 and 291 were awesome events. And now this is, I mean, this just rules. Like this, yeah. This event isn't the best, but the end result is awesome.
Yep. And that's what people are going to remember.
Before we go, I have a question for you gentlemen. Coming into the fight, where did you put, Aljamain Sterling the bantamweight GOAT? Like, where did you put him and where do you put him now?
In terms of the
all-time bantamweights.
Somebody brought this up a few weeks ago and I started diving into it, but I didn't really get all the way to a full answer. I think I'm still at Dominic Cruz. I don't feel confident in that answer with Aljo at number two. And it was somebody, and maybe it was AK, somebody this week, and I don't remember who, just sort of compared it to BJ being the GOAT lightweight, and it was sort of just a default one, like, his career is very important and substantial, but probably didn't really have like the resume that demands GOAThood. Certainly not in the case of other weight classes. And I feel like that with Dom, like he's kind of the default because of various factors, but this is still a division waiting on somebody to stand up and say, yo, I'm him.
Yeah. To me, it's, If we're comparing the bantamweight division and its history to like the ending of a Mario Kart Grand Prix, Aljamain Sterling is on the podium. Now, where you put him is up to you. It could be three, but he is on the podium with Dominic Cruz. If you want to throw G. Dillashaw in that conversation, fine. But he is one of the top two guys, even after tonight, he's still one of the top two guys. For sure.
Yeah, this doesn't knock him off the podium for me. Everyone takes losses. What he has previously accomplished is enough. So, but it's, you know, by the term greatest, it makes sense. But at the same time, we're talking, saying that, hey, you're the greatest bantamweight alive and being like, and also Anderson Silva's the greatest middleweight alive. Those don't feel like the same greatness levels, you know? It's like there's a bit of a gap there in the term GOAT we're comparing Georges St-Pierre and Dominic Cruz.
I always just thought that was super interesting about bantamweight too. Like you said, I'm the hipster and I think I love bantamweight. So, but I think it's just because it's a division. I don't know if we're ever going to have a true hard GOAT.
You'll get one eventually, but divisions are impossible like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now, like just even thinking about it more, it's Aljo one for me, and he's still one. If you want to put Cruz one, that's fine, but I just feel like Sterling's UFC resume is better than Cruz's. It just is, like the amount of names that he has beaten over all this time, and I understand Cruz had injuries, so he hasn't had as many fights as Sterling, but Sterling has fought everybody. And beaten just about everybody in the process. It's a tough run he's had, man. Really strong.
It's been a great run. If you pick Sterling, I'm not going to argue. My stance is I largely judge GOATness and that based not on your overall resume, though I think some of that factors in, but it's your time at the top because I think that's the hardest and most meaningful part of it. And
everyone's after
I would say that Cruz's time at the top was better. Comparative to his relative peers at the time. But if you want to pick Sterling, I got no beef with that. Yeah. It was supposed to be Jan. Piotr Jan was supposed to be the guy who was going to be the GOAT of this weight class. And MMA'd.
Yep.
That one knee. Yeah, I'm still of Dom as far as the GOAT, but that's not the hill I would die on. But
no.
Yeah.
No, but now this discussion becomes a little more interesting with Sterling there. And now the division, like, who knows? Like, Sean O'Malley is going to properly choose the big money fights. And if he can run off four or five title defenses, man, there are going to be people saying that he is the best if he has the record. It's going to happen. That's going to be a conversation that's going to be had. Will he be my
number
one?
Oh, that's absolutely the case.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no chance he's running off four or five. And I feel like I've been higher on Sean O'Malley than most. And credit to him, I believe who posted this? Because I want to remember who. Somebody put up the stat, and I'll find it in a second to give them their props. Sean O'Malley is the youngest UFC champion at this point. He's the only UFC champion under 30. So
that's crazy.
It's absolutely incredible for him to be there. He has the opportunity to have that level of success, but bantamweight and lightweight are divisions that people just aren't going to put together five wins at the top. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, this could be the beginning of the next gen making moves, because Erin Blanchfield's going to probably get a title shot sooner rather than later. She could be another one. I would pick her to beat either Alexa Grasso or Valentina Shevchenko right now. And there's others as well. So it's an interesting time. All right, Casey, you could hit the music. I think we have done our part here. It is 4:14 a.m. Eastern time. So time to wrap this up. But in about 5 hours and 45 minutes, we'll be back. AK will join me. We'll do some matchmaking. We'll have some fun. Talk about the fallout of this event and much more. MMA Hour on Monday with some special guest hosts. There'll be a lot more chatter about this. But thank you all for watching all the programming this week, checking out all the coverage this week. Shout out to Jose Young's boots on the ground. Dude works his ass off. So don't get it twisted in that respect at all.
That's great.
Thank you all very much. He really does. He's so good at
this. He doesn't ask about the Patriots or, hey, my buddy's really, really good at fighting, Dana. Are you thinking about signing him? Just good professional questions.
UFC Ecuador. Come on, tell me.
That was the best question. Chito Vera got a dub, and that man was like, I need to know about Morales. Okay.
Dana had no idea who that was.
He's like, all right, homie. You know that Chito just got the dub, right? I feel like you could ask about that Ecuadorian. But okay.
Fair enough. Go to sleep, everybody. Good night.
Love y'all.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.